Matlock rubbed his hands sensuously over the wooden top of his large desk, like he was caressing a giant oaken lover. "I'm Matlock," he whispered. "I'm Matlock," he yelled. He lay his face on the smooth wood. It was warm and cold at the same time, like skin. "Matlock." The law books jumped from their shelves like synchronized swimmers. Their arms popped out of their spines, and they marched to Matlock and lifted him up and carried him on their backs to his bed. He was exhausted. He had been working on the case night and day, and still there was no way of getting the real killer on the stand. That's all I got so far in my Matlock fan fiction. They call it fan fiction because the people who actually write the show don't like it. Only the people watching it. So here it is. We loathe ourselves and the content and the show and everything. But we know that you like it. And for that, you have earned our disrespect. And so we shall vomit up some silliness for you. I say that my life is a sort of fan fiction. I admire this scenario you have created, O rest of the world. And I'm going to plug my ideas into it. So I have an idea for your show. There's not one show or movie that I see that I don't think, ooh, I have an idea. For an episode, it probably wouldn't be good. A lot of the ideas I have sometimes are anti-ideas. You know, like a slow movie is to like Ozu is to Marvel. You would say, you know, I have these ideas for, Gilligan's Island, but they're subtle. It's a subtle event that happens. And I don't know if the music affects that, whether you'd have to change the sound design. It's hard to say. A lot of what you like in your favorite movie is happening in your, not necessarily in your, let's say you don't have your sense of hearing. I don't know how it's happening for you. I really don't. But it may be happening in your hearing only. This happens when I fall asleep with the television on. I go, gosh, I'm hearing this radio show. It's a really slow Hogan's Heroes. Because you forget how much Hogan's Heroes was just beautiful visuals. That's not true. A lot of these shows now, I've got this one television station on. And of course, I haven't seen too many Dragnet, but they do play Adam 12. And what both of these shows have in common is they're written like radio shows. So you literally can listen to them without the picture, because almost nothing is visual information. It's all just a radio show. And that's nice, because some of them, if I'm listening and I go, I don't know what's happening. You know, what's the joke? What does Schultz have an interesting expression? Is that why I can't hear it? It'd be nice. I wonder if, say, an Austrian Jew like John Banner sitting there thinking, I wonder why I'm playing a Nazi right now. This is interesting. Isn't life strange? But if I was going to rewrite that show, for instance, I would set it in a totally different thing. It wouldn't be World War II. What I would do is I would make it about a mythical time where they have imprisoned the people who created Blackadder, and the people who have done it are an army. It's an international force, really. And they're just, it's not that they're humorless. They're just done with all that, I guess. I say, what do they want from TV shows? Nothing. There's a popular one called The Tunnel, and it's just a tunnel. There's nothing going through it. There's nothing coming out of it. There's no really, sometimes the light changes subtly. And you go, well, maybe that's enough for the human soul. I've tried that with children. I go, how minimal a puppet show can you do? What do they require? So you try to get more elemental with the puppets. Say, how can I just break down a puppet to its part? Can I hold up a can of beans and say, I am the king? Yes, if it says I am the king, you're good. If you just hold up the beans and nothing happens, you've got to sort of add something. to it. You could hold up a puppet that looks like a king and say, I am beans. And maybe just keep saying that. And the kids would love that, I think. So a puppet cup would come on. It's just a king. And he goes, I am beans. And a lot of the kids would crack up. I think just a certain age. If there was such a thing as just being a comedian for a certain age group, like 8 or 9 years old, I would go undercover as a substitute teacher, but I wouldn't even pretend to do a good job. I would just try things out, try out material. I'd probably get fired a lot, so I'd have to, but I don't know what that would be. I'm out of touch with a lot of, you have to access to groups of people to find out what they think is collectively funny. What we all laugh at as a group, I wonder. So, you know how that is. There's a level of cracking wise where you do it in a crowded theater or something. Or you do it in the Sun Circuit or the president speaking or something like that. But there's a, where you break the silence by cracking wise. And then you get a laugh or you don't. Or you go to jail or whatever. So that's a daring one. I don't know. There's all sorts of things in between that, though. I have a lot of ideas for sure. I'm going to walk you through one right now. Imagine if today's radio was like it was for our ancestors. Hang on, let me put on a CD. I made a little skit about early radio. I've got sound effects and everything. I needed thunder, so I got a sheet of metal. I needed fire, and so I crumbled paper. I needed to... somebody to play a child, so I got some oddball voice actor who sounds like a baby. Oh, it's just like traditional radio. There was a couple of those. Not just Baby Snooks, man. I'm trying to think. There was a dude who sounded like a little girl. It'll come to me at some point. Oh, my word. And it was that was early radio. Hey, I'm not this. I can't do it. Nobody can do it because it's spooky and it's creepy and it's a gift. And that's old-time radio. Why isn't now like that? You know, what is different? And I think a lot of it is there's no sort of strange odor coming out of the thing you're listening to. Hear me out. I don't know whether... I believe the old-time radios that had tubes in them, or before that, tiny dinosaurs on treadmills, there was an odor that came out. I don't know if it was ozone, like what come out of early projectors, movie projectors that we'd have in school. The light bulb was so powerful that it would somehow change electrons or atoms or something and create ozone, which is, it's like super oxygen. I don't know. I don't know how you make it under conditions. A volcano or a public school projector are the only two places it can be made. And it has a distinct, also those old scalp vibrators had them. Maybe you can just make them with any old electricity. We made a time machine from one of those, from a opaque projector. So go get the overhead. So what's that? Look at that. Those are things I didn't know. By the time I was looking at overhead projectors in school, hippies had been using them at rock shows to kind of like move colored liquid around to make it look like you were hallucinating. Because you were. Why add that? I always wondered that about hallucinating. So you take a drug that makes you see all sorts of colors, and then you show people extra colors. It's like, no, I'm good. Why add to it? Everything's already enhanced. You know, this will make it even more so. Well, I'll save those colors for when I'm not on the drug, and then it'll feel like I am. Maybe that's what it was for. Maybe I'm misunderstanding. I get to a lot of ideas late. It's like PE class. Say, oh, I'm done. Oh, you missed a whole class. So you got in early for the next PE class who's running. But your people have already showered and they're back in class. And you missed the test. But that really happened to me often. So it's not a nightmare. I live my nightmares. I did terrible in school. I had very low grades. And a lot of time, here's the funny thing they would say, you're not working to your potential. And I would think, oh no. I mean, I was glad that they thought that, but that wasn't what was going on. I was working to my potential. That was the problem. It's just it was falling, you know, horribly short. I had no idea. So, oh, this is, but I am trying. No, you're not trying, but I am. You don't understand. I'm so sorry. Like, is there a test or something? And they would give me tests, and you go, well, you're not doing well on them. I go, can you figure this out or something? But anyway, and they go, okay, good enough. At some point, they go, good enough. That's fine. Because they do, they look at you, and they go, you could manage a shoe store, and that says something. And I think you could, not only that, is that you might be able to tell a darn good story while you do. And that's got to count at something. And so if you don't really understand really what a number is, which was my problem, I guess, I said, I don't know what any of that, I don't know, what do you mean, three? I don't know what that is. What is that? I used to have that problem. X equals what? I don't even know what we're talking about. Because a lot of the times I was busy drawing something. And you say, well, are you good at that? No, I was just doing that. You know how that is. I could have been playing with my hair. Well, no, you're good at playing with hair. Hairdresser? No, I just, it was something I was doing to not do the thing I was supposed to. So I could have been just distracted, but I know that when I have actually applied myself to something, I'm distressed by, you know, some of my capacity or lack of it. And thank goodness that there are things that I can do to disguise that. As I got older, you go, I can put a suit on and people won't think that, you know, I'm an incompetent little child, which is probably closer to the truth. I mean, it'd be terrible if there was some kind of glasses people could put on to see your true essence. You know, you're getting hired for a management job and they put their glasses on and you're like you're a 7-year-old picking their nose or something. And you go, oh, goodness, you know. And you got a weird look in your eye like you're going to let all the animals out of the cages. No. I would never do that. I was pretty. My ancestor, I learned about this. He had, and I'm pretty sure this is not an exaggeration. I think at 10 years old, he was working at a telegraph office, which is totally conceivable. I had classmates in fifth grade who were crackerjack at lots of things. And I would say, yeah, they could put that person in charge already. And I suppose if they were ambitious and they had a bad home life. So he did that, and he worked his way up, and he got, like, people kept trusting him to do stuff, I guess. And he became, had a reputation of being insanely competent, I guess, and self-reliant and self-assured. And then all his descendants were self-doubting alcoholics. So who knows what happened there. It is no guarantee. That's why. When I do my fan fiction, I don't tell it like it is. I tell it like it will never be. That's the other thing about you write a story for a world that you like. It may never make it onto the show. You think, oh, I spent a lot of time doing fan fiction for, I don't know, not the Ropers, but let's see. I guess what would be a goodie? Is it better to do like scripts for shows that are bad or good? Like, should you make a terrible, you know, that's a terrible show, but the premise isn't horrible. So maybe I could do something with it, right? And I know that my idea of, you know, cop ska is equally as bad, but still, it's my idea. And it could have a broader audience. So you know, you got to time these things right. It was 1990. So, you know, two-tone could mean like the black and white police car. I don't know. I am, as Fred Willard would say, just throwing it out there, just saying stuff. And I don't, the older I get, it's not that I don't have a filter. I have a filter. It's more like the percolator principle. And that is, it's a drip. It's a slow drip of things. I can't stop it anymore. I just leak coffee, which is like ideas. No, I don't. I'm trying to make my opinion known or anything. I don't have opinions, which is good. I'm relieved. Like, if I ever start to really lose my judgment, I'm not going to blurt out horrible judgmental things about people, because I just kind of don't think them anymore. I once did. I once did, and then I bought a mirror, both figuratively and literally, and I finally saw myself clearly, and I screamed for a month and a half, and then I said, thank you, universe, for letting myself see me. Oh, not again! And then I screamed for a year, and then it just kept showing myself relentlessly until I accept what I saw. And then I was like, okay, enough. That's all. And then I was less of an enemy, not only to myself, but others. So there you go. And just prepare to scream. What is the truth? I do not know. I do not know. Man, I feel sorry for the person that had to come up with the whole idea of truth, of the word. And isn't in Latin, the root has a V, so I don't know what, I don't know where the truth doesn't sound like it's a Latin word either. Maybe that's somebody else's. Some of our language is derived from very exotic sources, and some of them perhaps alien. There's, and I might be making this up, but I believe I read it in Dick Tracy, that there is moon language that we have worked in, and I guess it was bigger in the 30s than it is now, but like expressions that they say on the moon. And you work them, they get worked into the vernacular. How about that? That's something, isn't it? So I know that's true with other expressions. You go to live somewhere, it's hard not to say, you're not, how dare you say that expression? You're not really from blah, 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 which is a place on the moon. But you go, no, I lived there for a long time. So I don't know. You know, how long you got to live in Hawaii to be able to say X. That's a sort of algebra. That's a sort of algebra, and I'm better at it now. Except you put the word X in when there's a lot of things you could plug in to solve it. Or just one thing to plug in to solve it. I guess I don't understand algebra. And I never got to trigonometry, and I never got to, there's another, there's a couple more, calculus. I never got to. I just think it's, is that not what builds up on your teeth? Or is that something else? But I know I never got to it mathematically. And so I have had to use other tools to survive. And what have those been? A lot of the time, dependence on others is a big one. I found that I cannot concoct my own medicine very well. There's a lot of foods I can't make properly. There are, working on cars. I'm between cars right now, so that's fine. But things like that, a lot of times I can't do it myself, and I have to hire a professional. I really have to hire a professional for everything, which is something else. You know, here's help me do my work, help me do my thinking, help me with my sleep, help me with my dreams. There is no aspect of my life that I do not need someone better qualified than myself to tell me what to do. And then I realized, I need to join the army. That's what I need. And so I gathered up all my possessions and I walked down to my army recruiter and I said, sir, I don't care even what army this is. And he said, it's the Salvation Army. I said, I don't care. I'm signing up. And he said, well, what are your qualifications? And I said, well, I don't know if the Salvation Army works the same way as the regular army, but I was in a sort of Salvation ROTC. So I don't know, one day a week, we would go thrifting. And so that, and when I was in college, and so that's, I should be able to be an officer in your organization now, sir. And I expect with that a discount at your stores. And I know this isn't all about the stores and everything. It's all about, it's not about the retail for your church, your literal church. And if you've ever gone to see a production of Major Barbara, you will understand everything. And I think that's Shaw. It's Shaw, I think. I almost said Beckett. That'd be funny. I wish Beckett had written a story about the Salvation Army. He may have. I don't know, Major Craps, last tape. Is this on? I would like to somehow save you. I don't know if you need saving. That's so funny. But rope can be like that. You know, you can use it to, I can use it to save you. Or you can use it to tie up an old futon and then put it at the curb. It's your rope. I'm just trying to be helpful. And it might be simple. Yeah, I'm just a simple wound up coil of hemp. Which is, that's what they used to make. I don't know what they make rope out of. They make it out of all sorts of things. They make it out of nylon. They make it out of, now they make it out of, in the days it would be made of whale intestines. They'd have whale intestines, and then they'd tie chunks of ambergris to it, and they'd swing it around, and it would, the fragrance would be absolutely captivating. Say, what is that? I think it's highly prized aroma of whale vomit poo or whatever it is. Listen, I'm not here to educate. I wish I was or were. See, I don't even know the difference. But that's so funny how my ignorance is manifest in every level of it. The grammar, the word, the pronunciation, the content, everything. You look at it, it's recursive. It's like absolute fractal of incompetence. Every level, whatever focus you are, stand way back and it looks wrong. Look, keep going deeper and deeper, wrong at every level. How do I do it? Even. Got to keep mixing it up. Got to keep confusing yourself. Say, how do I keep myself off balance? Well, that's not right. I don't want to coast. You get it wrong, see? I don't want things to go smoothly. I want to ride those bumps. What is surfing? It isn't gliding along a smooth surface. No. It's riding up the crest or going inside the pipe, which is scary. Don't go too deep in the pipe and then you're going to have to ask for help. But they'll get you out. And you're riding that crest again. Riding that crest of water like it's a French pastry. Coming off of it, boom, onto that beach. You say, I'm alive. And I'm alive because I kept going. I let it myself be tossed around by the waves. I got on them and I rode them instead of letting them batter me. Oh, this life here. Life is like that. It'll hit you with stuff. And you say, oh, I can take it. It's like an army of children with some kind of Nerf bat. You go, oh, this is nothing, right? It's just children with Nerf bats. And then there's 10, and then there's 20. And then there's 30 children with Nerf bats. And you go, wait. This doesn't feel manageable anymore. So it's the concentration of what I'm trying to talk about is bacteria is like that too. You say, oh, you know, you can eat something that's a little off, but then it's really about bacterial load, not about the absence of bacteria. When are you out of something too? I know it's like the heat paradox, but I've seen that friend said, look, I'm out of weed. I go, well, you have some left. He goes, not really. But I mean, what does that mean? I'm out of flour. Well, you have some flour. What's out? When are you out? When are you really out? Because you're out before you're out of something, usually. You know, I'm out of butter. You're, you know, virtually out of butter or something. You might as well be out of butter. But you aren't really. So I don't know. I guess the thing you could do is make yourself smaller. When I have less of something, so if I see my coffee is running down, I go, oh no, I have less coffee. What I'll do is I'll make myself physically smaller. Not everybody can do this, I suppose. But I'll go, I'll just,
oh, now I'm very tiny.
And I'll make myself smaller, and then it'll last longer. A lot of times near the end of the month, I'll be living in a dollhouse in the corner, you know, drinking out of a thimble. But then I'll be able to be large. Let's just say living large and everything. That's what they mean. And that's what they mean by small houses. or tiny houses. People go, oh, when you see people, when I see someone in a tiny house, I always think, what you really want is the womb. That's what you really want. First, it's going to have this tiny house. Then you're going to be soaking in a tank like Boba Fett. And then the next thing is, or Matrix or something. And then it's like, do you want to go back? You know, here's, take this reverse birth pill. Oh, I'll do that. And I will float in the womb. I wouldn't mind that. Or just a big old creaky old drafty house. I'd love that too. Why did we buy this place? It doesn't have air conditioning. You know, Victorian mansion for that amount? Let's do it. We'll go in on it with friends. And now we all, that'd be a fun sitcom. So obviously you see a Victorian mansion for sale in town. Y'all work, let's say y'all work service industry jobs or something. One of you works for the state, but it's not clear what they do. IT? But then you see an ad for a Victorian mansion. And the price tag is affordable if you split it like five ways. So you all decide you're going to split this thing five ways. Worst case scenario, you make it an Airbnb or an Air D&D, which is a new thing where you get a bunch of LARPers in there to say, pretend this is a haunted mansion. Then but then let's say you all move in, you go, we'll restore it together. You know, we'll work on it on weekends or during the week while other people are trying to sleep. And then, but then you're all stuck with this old mansion, and then you all grow old there, and then that's when the story begins. You're all living there, and there's holes in the floor, stuff falls through and everything. It's a little bit like the Munsters, but it's not meant to be funny. It's meant to be sad. But it is funny. It's still funny, though. Isn't that neat? I lie a lot of times, if it's on television, it is just inherently funny. That's funny to me. So even if it's really deadly serious, I go, come on. Come on. All you have to do is, what I do is I'll blink my eyes, move my head to the side, and then I'll see the cat or something, and I'll go, this isn't real. And I'll laugh, even if it's really serious or scary. And then and I do this too because I got surround sound. I'll hear a knock and I'll turn around, but it'll be the sound from the movie. So I know not to trust that either. So if somebody's behind me screaming, I go, no, this has happened in the real, now when it happens in real life, I ignore it, which isn't terrible. You know, ignore the scream sometimes is not a bad motto. You know, sometimes you just have to. Sometimes you got to face things. Face the music, and then there ought to be an expression like, turn your back on the music or something like that. You don't have to face it constantly. We are all pretty obsessed with music in this country. Face it. Oh, face it, talk about it, eat it, smell it, rub it on yourself. Music, 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 buy it, love it, make it, marry it. So I don't get that. I mean, I like music, but I also like other sounds and things too. I make them. I make all sorts of sounds. And I'm talking, and I also like silence and all sorts of other things. So I don't think of them as any kind of separate thing from life necessarily. Also, my friends, because they're puppets, sometimes they say things like, you know, anything can be music. And they start hitting items. Washing machines, you know. Do you hear that? I'll go, what? They go, it's a machine making a rhythm. I love it. Let's rap. And then we'll do that. We don't always do that. We like to make each other cringe. I hear there are more people dressing up like the Three Stooges at cons. And I am so excited. I saw four or five Moes at the last one. And I said, what? What's going on? And I saw two Larrys in line to see the Green Power Ranger. And I think things getting open up, being more diverse and everything. And I think a whole generation of young people are discovering more things from the past. And that's a neat thing, you know. And all the good things and the bad and the villains and all. Look at that hilarious Jimmy Carter mask you're wearing. Who's that coming up on you? Oh, it's Lester Maddox with a pick handle. Because the kids are getting more and more literate about the past and wanting to reenact it. Say, not just the Civil War, let's reenact everything. Let's reenact it and then just forget. Because we do that, we do this thing. It's like, you know that movie where they, Inception? We do that with historical reenactment. We'll do levels of it. Like, here's people in the Civil War reenacting the something, and we'll just keep going deeper. You know, Crimean War, and then but they're not really Crimean War. They're people in the Victorian age pretending to be Crimean War. You can flip it around there like that. And we get so lost in it. We don't know when we are or whether we're pretending or it's really happening. A lot of, I was speaking of Hogan's Heroes, I thought I was playing war when I was really playing Hogan's Heroes sometimes with my friends. Because, I mean, I guess I had seen Combat with Vic Morrow. That comes in great on an old black and white set. But that might be it, though. So all of it came from that. Or somebody put some F Troop in there, maybe, to lighten it up. But, oh, Hogan's not light enough. I don't know. It depends on your neighborhood. Some people are like, ooh, that's a lot of that. I do that a lot now. Just watching anything. I look at, oh, Lord. Because I'm learning and growing. As you learn and grow, you should go. It's not a bad thing, I don't think. You put that in there for a reason. It's the same reason that you smell. If something smells like feces, you probably shouldn't eat it. And that's for things in the fridge. Now, you can break that rule when someone goes, okay, I'd like you to try something. I swear to God it's food. It isn't excrement. It smells like feces. But I think people made with durian fruit or something. You go, okay. If I know to ignore my, like swallowing a pill, you know, this doesn't seem right. No, go ahead. Because I had to swallow a pill and it looked like a Barbie shoe. And I thought, they tell you not to put this in your mouth and swallow it. And I go, no, but you have, in this case, it's medicine. So, or a Lego. I genuinely trust people who have not let me down yet. And then I wait till they do. And then I change tactics. Just like my grandmother's address book, she put down an address. And if they moved, she crossed it out and wrote a new one in. Or if they died, she'd cross it out and write died or something. I don't know. Do people, is that moving, that last one? Does that count? It depends, I guess, if somebody's still living there, if it's half of a family or something. Half of the family died. That happened to my neighbors. Half of the family died in a plane crash. No, not half. 5/6. That's more than half, isn't it? I told you math is terrible. That was something else. I wasn't super good friends with the kids, but you know, I didn't think they'd all die in a plane crash. That was a bit of a shock. I remember thinking, wow, do not. And I think my grandfather had just died. And I didn't see that coming either. And then the cost of the neighbor family died. Like the whole damn family. And then what happened after? And I thought, oh, that really all was a transformative time for me. I thought, this is something else. My goodness, I think things change quickly, don't they? And I got a little nervous after that for a while. It took me a while to figure out that, you know. And then, well, I guess it was because some people just keep enduring. And you think, how about that? That's so funny. This person isn't here anymore. And this person, can you believe it, is still around. I wouldn't mind them saying about that. I didn't know you were still alive. Yeah, I am. Do my friends say that? No, they know. I insist that they know I'm alive. Because I send them an email like that. I go, I'm alive, you know, or a message like that. And then they'll message right back. And I go, I'm sorry. No, I don't do that. I try to keep in touch with as many people as possible. I find having a radio show is good. It's really like having a Christmas letter. Hey, friends, here's what's been going on the last year. As you may or may not know, I am now the president of the moon. And that happened through a weird series of events. Also, you might like my new album and music. Here's music. What music are you listening to? And what does music mean to you? Also, here's my pictures of my pet, which is fun. We all love your pet. Love it more than you. I think a lot of it is like, I lived in another country where I didn't speak the language for a while. And I got the whole reason that I liked dogs. And that I had been learning from them. And I didn't realize it. And that is, you know, how to make friends without being able to speak with them. And so the dog, and then, you know, appreciating when they feed you or something, or when they're nice to you or loyal. So I really felt an affinity with dogs after living with the French, and who treated me just like a dog, and how I treat dogs. So it was really lovely. And then I've always had an affection for that place and for pups and for you, my friend on the radio. Oh, talk about something having a smell. My uncle got me a transistor radio, and I'll never forget him for it. And he must have gotten it. He didn't go too many places because he didn't have a car, so he must have got it at the Campbell Soup gift shop. He worked for Campbell Soup, and it just went between his house and Campbell Soup, so I'm pretty sure he got it at their gift shop because he got me a mug one. I still have, I've had it for 50 years, the mug he got me, longer than that. But, and I wish I had the radio, but I'm pretty sure that's the only place he shopped, because I'm sure there was a company store saying, well, you can get a salary or you can get a radio. Oh, I have, you know, I'll get it from my nephew. So he got me this lovely radio, and it had a little leather kind of pouch and everything. And oh, I love, you know how the radio can be in and out of the pouch. It doesn't have to be in the pouch. Pouch is like is protective, but it's got holes in it so the sound can get out. And if you're lucky, between the pouch and the actual nice radio going in is a little desiccant packet, like some little bit of silicone or something, a little desiccant. And that'll keep it, I guess it keeps it fresh. And, oh, it's nice. And with an earphone, they didn't call them buds then. When they started calling them buds, I was like, we already had these, but go ahead. But you got an earphone, a slightly different shape. It was more concerned with not going in and getting lost, I think. It's like, well, it's got a little thing on the end so you couldn't jam it up into your... Nowadays, I feel they don't care. I go, this looks treacherous. This looks like it could go up in there, into my brain, and nobody would care. They would just sell me a new one. Oh, did you lose another earbud up into your brain? Yeah, well, just get new ones. But the old ones were like, no, this doesn't go in all the way. They had a similar... And they were made of a similar thing to those Vicks inhalers. We used to take, I used to carry around this thing that looked like a dead baby's finger, and I'd stick it in my nose and smell it, and it was menthol. And I guess it cleared your head up. I don't know if we, and they still have them. And so I was able to get one. And I don't know if it does anything. But I thought, oh, if I'm around decay, this would be nice. I'll just hold it up to my nose and it's with my silk hanky over it and say, yes, what has gone on here? Go, well, Inspector, there's been quite a mess. I can see that. And I'm smelling my menthol so I don't smell the horror. Oh, my gosh, I need to change the subject. I've been told that before. Say, the subject is like a diaper. It's fresh when you start it, and then after a while, you got to change it. Sometimes change it regardless, because it just gets damp and fetid, even if you hadn't a maid in it. So just put a clean one on and wipe down the audience's tenders with something that's not very caustic, something that's gentle. And I don't know what that's something that cleans, but it's gentle. What would that be? Love, but not that kind of overwhelming weird stuff that makes you join a cult. Just the kind of well-wishing. Say, oh, that's the kind of love I get from my grocer, who's very generous and nice and sweet. And I don't know where they're from, but they're a lovely family. So that's what I want to give you as a gift. I have something for you. What is it? Art? Uh-oh. It's not a painting, is it? It's a very large painting. Nobody wants that. Oh, God, what is... Oh, it's a cute dog clown or something. No, it's my niece. You don't... art is a tough thing, very personal. I think the underwear, I don't give people that. I wonder if they get books. Oh, good, a big, thick book. Thank you.
Let's read it together.
I have a couple all lined up in a queue. It's so long. And I'll tell you what's in there is, Proust or something. So I don't know if I'm ever going to get to your thing. I might. I don't know. I've read friends' books before. I know that's crazy. I remember doing it. My friend said, here, read this. I'm going to stand right here while you do. And I read it. And it didn't actually take that long. It was good. And I'm glad I did. Other times, Larry King never used to read a book. Even if he's going to have a guest on, he'd be like, tell me what it's about. Oh, wow. That's fantastic. I've ended friendships because I've never gotten around to reading somebody's novel. So I can't see him again. I didn't want to do it. But a lot of times that's just, it just happens. Or album, did you listen to my album? And they'll be like, how long does it take? That's like 30 or 40 minutes of your life. And I go, I know. But sometimes you don't understand. I just missed the window for the car registration. And although I'm not driving it right now, you got to keep it registered or they don't, or they give you a ticket in your own driveway. So I didn't even do that. So I love you, and I love that you make things, but I can barely pay my bills. So I don't know. I'm trying. I will. I'll go to your I'll tell you what. I will go to your show. I'm going to go to your show. I swear I'll be there. If I don't, you don't have to ever talk to me again. And then I will. And then I'll be glad I went. And then the next thing I know, I'm in the band. And then I'm not showing up at practices. Because that isn't really what I wanted. I often don't know what I want from life or friends or something. And maybe that's not good for them. Maybe I should every day I'm going to make a proposal. Of what I want out of life and everything. That way I won't go around with just that nebulous feeling of emptiness. Say, something isn't right. I feel like something's out of place. That's probably just the default feeling in the universe. Man, something's not quite right. And I've touched on that topic before on the show. I did a whole show called This Can't Be Right. And I just feel like that's maybe the dominant feeling. Man, this can't be right. This is just, something feels wrong. When you're getting sick, you go, man, something's just not right. And it's just a feeling. But isn't life just a feeling? All of existence is merely a feeling. It is in the among these we're using words, and so they just refer to impressions, not real things. It isn't the thing. It's not even the symbol for the thing, it's a symbol for the impression, the feeling of the thing, isn't it? What are you talking about? I'm saying how, like, when you really think about things, they disappear. That's why things feel like, everything feels like a stoned dorm room discussion. If sophisticated people are doing it, you go, okay, well now they must be, this doesn't sound like airy fairy because they're using math and everything like that. And then it does when, us goofuses do it and everything. But I think it really has to do with a lot of things sort of disappear when you look right at them. And it's very hard to intellectually cope with that, that if I examine something, it could be going away as I'm looking at it. And, you know, I'm not really learning anything more about it. I'm creating more questions. Why do anything, Hardy? Because I tried not eating and it hurt my tummy. So I'm just going from that. A lot of things I'm just going to go with momentum, instinct. I seem to get a lot done thoughtlessly. And then when I add a little thought to things, it is kind of next level. And then maybe someday I'll go third, fourth level. But right now, I'm practicing, occasionally doing things with intention. And then I'll go back to just being a clockwork orange. And that's okay, too. Oh, my friends, you are. And you thought I was going to do the station ID. That's what I do when I say, you are listening. But I was going to just tell you something wonderful about yourself. Well, at least from my point of view. And that is how thoughtful you are. And how constantly curious and on the run you are. That's who I want to go into the woods with. Somebody who's excited about seeing things. Not somebody who's blasé. Somebody who's running around from one tree to the next going, look at this now, look at this now, look at this. That's the way to approach it. That's the way he sees it. Go into that forest with the curiosity of a bunny who's the size of a elephant gorilla. What are you talking about? I'm saying there's a certain amount of self-deluded fearlessness that will enhance the experience. I pretend I am large. Nothing can touch me. I do it on the radio. Why would I be saying the things I'm saying if I wasn't at least pretending to be confident? I might be pretending to be confident. There might be so many levels of obfuscation. Can you imagine trying to discern whether I'm saying things for real or what, or what's pretend and what's not? I like that. That's how I'll tell you what, I'm going to deflect. I'll play dumb guys. And then people think it's an act. I thought that for a while. And then they won't. I don't know. I'm not down on myself. I have an enormous amount of everything I do. I'm only self-deprecating because it's an expectation socially, because people mistake self-love with arrogance or something. But I say self-love is self-preservation. It's just the baseline of existence. You know, I'm like, I'm me. I think I'm going to be, for me within reason is okay. I'm sure there's going to be people who convince me that I should abandon myself for something else, maybe for a product or a concept or something. But I haven't had to do it. Even for the more care I've taken of myself, the better I'm able to take care of others, I've noticed. And the evidence is that there are people who can count on me and depend on me, and I'm there. So I must be doing something right there. But I was not that way when I had accidentally put my head into my bottom as a way of mistakenly performing a self-examination. I thought I was looking into my soul, but I was just looking up into my butt. And now I've turned things outward a bit. And like I said, I think it was from looking at that nice harsh mirror that makes you scream. It had to be. And then I was able to accept that and say, look at that. Look at the complexity of your worth. Look at how wonderfully, alluringly unobvious your beauty. Look how mysterious your magic. As if your very soul was Don Quixote's helmet. a wash basin to the jealous, and a golden hat to the curious and the open-minded. And that's the way I have, that's where I have arrived. And I'd love for you to come with me. Can you come with me? I'm going to outstretch my hand. I'm going to stretch out my hand, and I'm going to stick it here in this rock, and I'm going to hope that a catfish grabs my whole fist with its mouth. And then when it does, I will pull the catfish out. And what is that catfish? It's a catfish. I'm just describing a way of catching them. And I had a whole show on that. Anything that you ever hear of, someone's going to, can we make an entire show out of it? Probably, yeah. Anything, really. And because it's just a template, isn't it? Everything can be a template. Perhaps we are too. Oh, I don't mind being a template. Even though it makes me think of the thing you when you're spraying a pattern onto the toy box you just made, and you go, "I want it to look like I want it to look colonial." Back in my day, you know what? My mother used to antique a lot of furniture. It was a technique in the 60s or 70s, it was a way of ruining older furniture. So I'm gonna antique it, and you put like white paint on it with gold streaks or something. Ooh. It went from looking sort of like, you know, 18th century to 1970s. How'd you do that? That's beautiful. And now I would pay anything for some old ruined furniture like that. Isn't that funny? Because now it's nostalgia. No, I don't really have nostalgia for that. I have nostalgia for when it was hard to turn the steering wheel. Yep, which I'm going to buy one. I think that when I go to the fairgrounds, you know, I bought the car that I had my first wreck in. And when my face hit the steering wheel, that's why I have, this is a different face. But I'm going to go buy, it was faster. I remember it being faster and smelled funny and all that kind of thing. I don't know. I think most of my nostalgia, I have it still. It's like a virus. You know, it's under control, but it's not gone. And, I question it so that I won't, that harmful ideas will not piggyback with it. And that I won't do things that are unintentionally hateful, or that my worldview might be distorted or cruel because I long for some, cartoon. Like, oh, Mr. Hitler and Friends was so cute, or something. I don't know what it would be. But, you know, no, it's not worth it. So I try to always be corrected. I don't mind changing course all the time. So, all this confusion. Bring it on. Confuse me. I would rather be confused and harmless than certain and harmful. I wish I could. Oh man, that would have been better if I had found a better word than harmful and cruel. I don't know. You can work on it. Work on it at home. Come back next week. I hope you're keeping a diary like I suggested, and that we can talk about different things, different impressions you have of the show and everything. Otherwise, I don't know. How am I just going to do a show for 10 years if I don't know, if you're not writing things down every day and then letting me know? Don't only the things that you think I can do something about. Like, don't say, oh, you're not funny. Because that I can't do anything about. Or say, do this or that. Don't say that. Say things like, here's what I love about the show, and here's where I think you couldn't possibly do any better. And those things like that, those work better than you think they do. So, we're giving children too much praise or rewards. Let's give them more. I've said, I'm going to give children $1 million for every A. And then let's see what happens. Just for one school, just for one child, maybe. Let's see if it works. I'll do it. Oh, my gosh, I'll do it. Listen, I'll go back to school and somebody gives me $1 million for every A and then I'll see what I'll see how I do. Guess what? I'll get C's. I know it. I already know this. So if I only had a chance. No, that's not it. I know me. I have to do with knowing I know my limitations. I know my comfort level. I know my abilities, and I'm thankful for them, and I am immensely blessed and prosperous, and mainly for sort of knowing myself. I do feel, you know, I feel the same as other living creatures in that I'm a living creature. We're all given different things and everything, and I don't want to be cruel or hurt anybody. That's another little rule I have. That's just me. It works out better when if I follow that rule. That's me. Perhaps you can be cruel or with impunity, or bully with impunity, or something. But I can't. I have it disrupts my psyche. And so that's just a little rule I made for myself. And also, lately, I've just been eating whatever I want. I don't want to do that. I want to change that rule again. Back to, you know, not so many donuts or so. If only that was donuts. If I was eating too much and it was donuts, I think I could justify that. But a lot of times I eat too much and it's just garbage food that I don't even like. Maybe eating out of stress, or I'm too lazy to prepare a proper meal. Lately, I've been pretty good about cooking. And, you know, so make my own pasta. Well, cavatelli. You can make it with a little. You want me to cook for you right now? Come on into the kitchen with me. This last segment's just going to be me cooking. Oh, no, it isn't. It's going to be, what is it? Oh, I wanted to play something for you. Lou did he used to be a toaster, and he did some toasting, and he did a record called The World is Whack, and I'd like to play it for you. I'm going to play, this is Lou doing his hit single, The World is Whack. The world is whack. The world is whack, that's a fact. I looked it up in a stack of crack magazines a while back. You said Hoboken, I thought you said Hackensack. In that case, here's a Big Mac and a pack of Phillips Golden Blacks. I can hear your lips smack, I can hear your heart attack. You don't lack subtlety, fellow School of Hard Knocks faculty buddy. What'd you think was gonna transact? Anyway, Jack, I got clackers from the 70s gonna smack your skull, send a crack down the side like a Fontanelle or Liberty Bell. I'm gonna goof on your product's name like a Spiegelman Wacky Pack. Like I'll say iCAC for iMac or Star Burps with a pick of a guy belching Alpha Centauri. Sorry, not sorry. If it hurts, you should use it more. Go have a light snack and eat a lamp. Hardcore fakers lie on beds of liquid nails, shaking to make it look like a trance. Tip, stamp your website on your old business cards instead of printing more. Lick the floor like a beagle if you're bored. I got more, but there's a time limit for reasons I'll ignore. Suffice it to say, I like it that way. Nice of you to stay. Most leave by now. Hey, there's a thing after the gig if you've no big plans, with wigs and fans and French royalty sans suntans and pants even. If you don't leave early evening and can make it to the part where the king gets naked. Man, the world is whack. The world is whack. Oh, my word. What are we listening to?
Oh, you're listening to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White.
What's that? On WFMU, East Orange, WMFU, Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County in New York City, New York, and online, WFMU.org worldwide. Boy, I think I said that right. And it's the first time I've ever said it. No, it isn't. It's the 100 millionth time. I'm so glad that you joined me, and I will see you again next week, my friends.
estás empujando.
Yeah.